Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, where does David Cole live? Also, an incarcerated man is tased, frozen to death, according to the lawsuit. And Mo Brooks is running for another office. He just can't quit. Come on! Be afraid. Be very afraid. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and as always, I'm joined by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Moon, columnist and investigative reporter at APR. Welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, guys.
We'll get right to it. You know, Mo Brooks came out and said that he was retiring from politics. He was going to go to his place on Lake Gunnersville, and he was going to, you know, have his grandchildren over and enjoy his life. Well, after he said that, he ran to be on the executive committee of the Alabama GOP, and he got slaughtered. He got two whole votes on that. Now he's throwing his hat in the ring, Susan, to be the chair of District 5 for the Alabama GOP. So he's going at it again.
Is anybody really surprised? The man can't shut up. I mean, everybody's telling him to go home, and he's still not going home. I mean, the text that he sent out was just really awful. I mean, he goes on about who all's asking him to run. He says, my willingness to be nominated is contingent on voters not changing their minds about their votes. I will ask people to not nominate me. For some reason, the commitment level falls, if the commitment level falls to 30 or less.
So, Josh, what is he saying? He wants a guarantee that he's going to win before he publicly announces he's running. But we got the private emails that he sent out, and this is typical Mo. I mean, he's a loser. The only reason he won all those years in the House was because they gerrymandered that district to suit him.
Yeah. You know, it is. It's pretty typical Mo Brooks. He can't stay out of the light. He wants somebody to pay some attention to him, and he wants to be important. He's realized in a very short period of time that being out of the limelight and out of somebody coming and asking for his opinion on something here or there, it's pretty boring to him. And so he wants to get back into this. And it doesn't matter what he said before about, you know, playing with the grandkids and, you know, retiring and living life or whatever. It's just, this is, you know, it's all about Mo. It's always, always, always been about Mo.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the things, the big things about those positions is you're supposed to back the party nominee. Now, I don't know, Susan, but I don't think Mo has a great track record of, backing the party nominee.
Now, talk to Donald Trump, you know, back in the beginning before he was very Trumpy. Yeah. Talk to Katie Britt, who when she defeated him, he had his feelings so hurt that he publicly announced he would not vote for her. He would not support her.
Yeah,
Republican. He wouldn't support another. That's a big no-no as far as I'm concerned. I know.
Well, and he says that Sam Gavan, who's a senator up there, Judge Linda Coates, Morgan County Chair Julie Klassen, and Tom Frederick have all
and
been.
Others, and others encouraged.
Have been begging him to run. And I know others that are begging to run too, Josh. Run to Tennessee or run to Mississippi.
Run home. Or run home. Just run home.
Yeah, I just don't understand why? Because I don't doubt that he has some friends there, but I still don't understand why anybody would be clamoring for Mo Brooks. And maybe it is all in Mo's head, which I think, you know, we've known for a while that there's a lot of crazy things that goes on up there. Yeah. But I mean, it is pretty strange that that people would ask him to run, given his track record of not really doing anything to help anybody else but himself.
Yeah, and then the mailbox, the mail, post office.
Yeah,
there. Got
the post office. Don't forget the post office.
Can't forget that, because that's the only thing you got done. So you got to remember that.
Yeah, you got to remember that. I want to get back to this. Josh, you broke this story months and months ago, where David Cole, who was the candidate for House District 10 at the time, discovered that it appears he doesn't live in that district. His house is in District 4. You've seen it. We know he lives in that house, but he claims he lives in District 10. And they tried to get around this, but finally the courts have ruled he's going to have to give a deposition and under oath say where he lives.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to have to give a deposition. The person's house, whose address he used on his filing form, they're going to have to give a deposition in this. And people expect that this whole charade is going to kind of fall apart. I mean, the lunacy of this that we're talking about, the house that he lives in, that he owns with and lives in with his family, is in District 4. There is no disputing this is the case. So much so that he tried to use another address when he was running for office. Right. He used the address of a family friend to qualify that lived in District 10. But we know that this house that he lives in is in District 4, and he still lives there. I mean, we're going through this whole thing, and it's not like he's moved to this other district and he's trying to say, well, we were in the process of moving or whatever. He still lives in this house outside of the district.
They even tried to rent an apartment in that district, too, and say that they were in the process of moving, which never took place.
I mean, when you have Republicans talking about voter integrity and have a guy that nobody's called to step down.
No.
And he ran knowing he didn't live in the district, tried to subvert the rules. Mm-hmm. How do you look yourself in the face and go, well, I'm a Republican who's for voter integrity, when one of your friends, your colleagues, your buddies, just cheated his butt off to get elected?
Allegedly.
You know, I think it's been well pointed out here that if this is all true, and on the way into office he was trying to subvert the rules to benefit himself, well, what should we expect from him once he's in office? You know.
Yeah, and I hear he's really mad about this.
Oh, well.
And says he's going to get even with people who
yes,
expose
he does. Move. Oh, yes, he does.
Move to the district, man. What are you doing? Move. But, or just run against the guy that's in District 4.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it'll be eventually up to the Republicans to look at the evidence and either keep him in the House or not.
But this will be something to watch toast. About what All they
right.
do.
All right. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Speed is one of the biggest factors in a fatal car crash. Your car stops, but your body does not stop at the same time. Your body keeps going. You know, and that could be running into your seatbelt, that could be hitting the airbag, something has to stop it. And unfortunately, it's something very hard.
There have been times that we've come upon accidents where if people weren't speeding, they'd probably still be alive today.
It's truly dangerous and it puts everybody at risk.
There's just no point to it.
This kind of stuff has got to stop.
My dog Jupiter is frightened when I climb too high, the owl said.
Check for monsters, Daddy.
I did, honey. There are no monsters. You're perfectly safe.
Protect yourself and those you love. Vaccinate now.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You know, Josh and Susan and I talked about this quite a bit last night before we, while we were talking about the show. This will be, part of this will be a disturbing segment. When we get to that part, I'll let you know. But Anthony Mitchell, 33-year-old man, was arrested. And then he was taken to the Walker County Jail by the sheriffs, where, according to a lawsuit, he was repeatedly tased, put into a refrigerated area or some type of refrigerated unit, and left there until he froze to death, later froze to death at the hospital. According to the doctor's statement, he died of hypothermia. Susan, it's one of the most horrendous stories I've ever seen.
And that's putting it lightly, okay, what you just said is, and I have to tell you, I am incensed, I'm infuriated that anything like this is even thought about being done. They initially put him in a holding cell for several days, no toilet, no bed, without any clothes on. Okay, now they said that that has to do with the suicide watch and all that. I get
that. He was having mental health issues,
which... The sheriffs had assured his cousin that he would receive treatment for once they got him to the facility. But no, once they got him to the facility, they just treated him like a caged animal. Now, not only was he in the freezer, they found him at 4 a.m. in the freezer in a restraining chair in that freezer. Now, they didn't call the ambulance. They took him back to his cell where all the people that were working that day went and visited and looked at him, including a nurse, according to the lawsuit. Well, didn't give him any medical treatment, left him there for almost 5 hours before they didn't call an ambulance again. They transported him to a sheriff's car to take him to the ER, where they did not tell him they had found him in a freezer, did not tell them what was going on. He was taking about 2 to maybe 4 breaths per minute when he got there.
And Jonathan, I want to roll this clip real fast. If you are squeamish about watching someone that's incapacitated, I would turn away from the television. Let's watch this clip. Josh, that's kind of the least of the pictures that we've seen. We've seen him naked, being dragged from a cell, the other things like that. If this is all true, this is criminal in my mind, what the sheriff did there.
It's horrendous. And let's not forget, we also have another simultaneous lawsuit that was filed by a former deputy that worked for Walker County Sheriff's Office, who leaked a lot of this footage and said she was terminated improperly because of disclosing this information. She wanted people to know that basically a murder was committed.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, it's a murder. It's a murder of a person. You know, there were other details in here as well. He had false teeth because he had years of drug use, and so he had false teeth, and they fell out when he was being tased, and the deputies confiscated those and kept them, and he could not eat for the few days he was in there because he didn't have any teeth in his mouth.
Yeah,
he was in there 14 days.
14 days.
He was in there 14 days.
Approximately 14 days.
Yeah, and so. There seems to be now, and it filters from the top. And this starts with KIV and with Steve Marshall and with our legislators, and their refusal to address the very real problems and the cruelty and the just obscenities that occur every single day within our prison system. All right. This filters down from the top. And we treat people now with a level of cruelty and it's accepted and it's almost expected, as though there's some badge of honor for you doing horrible things to people at these facilities. And it happens at county jails. You know, and I know a lot of county sheriffs, and I think that they are, for the most part, good men who want to do the right thing. But there are a lot of instances like this that take place at county jails. And I just, it's unfathomable that this went on for this period of time with nurses, with other employees walking by these rooms and seeing what's taking place with another human being. And I understand that this was a troubled individual that was having a mental breakdown. And there should probably be other places that we should be able to take these folks to. And there used to be other places that we could take them to instead of jails and county sheriff's offices and stuff. But you can't, if you're going to take this man in, you can't treat this person like this. You can't do this. This is not okay. And what are we doing anymore? Seriously, what are we doing?
And that's the thing, Susan, we keep talking about, is that this man had mental health issues. He should have been in some different type of facility. But if this is all you have, you still have to treat him like a human being. And like you said, caged animal. If everything in that lawsuit is true, they treated him worse than you would treat a dog.
Okay, fine. They don't have the capacity to mental health. I get that. Okay. I don't get them locking him in a freezer. All right. I don't get them taking 5 hours to take him to the emergency room. The 5 hours they could have called an ambulance to him. They let him lay on the floor and within trash within his cell and just stared at him.
It started from the very beginning when they disseminated the photo of him, of his face spray painted black,
right,
and to make fun of him. And that's what they do.
Exactly.
It started that way. And you know, this is born out of ignorance. Okay. These are stupid people that we've put in charge of things like this, and stupid people behave this way. And we've got to do better about, number one, educating people, and number two, getting stupid people the hell out of the system. That's in charge of things like this.
I would agree. And I got to tell you, Josh, now, we put up the picture of him before all of his mental health started, because I'm telling you, the reason they put that picture out with his face painted black had to do with the fact that people are going to look at that and go, oh, that's just another crazy drug addict. Yep. Oh, well, that's not a big deal. It is a big deal, even if he is a crazy drug addict.
Yeah, he's still a human being. And we have laws against murdering people. We have laws against torturing
and
people.
And everybody there is culpable that was there that day.
All right. Well, that's
who's not. You know who didn't have a mental problem or who doesn't have mental issues? Were all of those people at the sheriff's office that were supposed to take care of this person and provide and service and protect. That's what I guarantee you, that's on their badges somewhere. Serve and protect.
All right, we're gonna have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth. Without any bread, and kiss them all soundly.
Lights out.
Good night.
And put them to bed. Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org.
Throughout my career, I've seen many crashes, and a lot of the fatalities are from people who haven't worn their seatbelt.
Cars have rolled over multiple times.
I've had people end up in lakes, ravines. I've been looking for people in the woods for a couple hours before.
Usually just about every bone in their body is broken, their organs have ruptured, and typically they die.
You want to save a life? Just simply click a button and put that seatbelt on.
Seatbelts really do save lives.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You know, and along these lines, the legislature changed the way pardons and parole board worked. And since we've changed leadership over at the Board of Pardons and Parole. Not talking about Cam Ward. No. Talking about the board that actually authorizes paroles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has been atrocious. This board does not follow its own guidelines. It does not follow the rules that the legislature put in place. Mm-hmm. But no one wants to do anything about it because these are friends of Steve Marshall's. Last year or last session, there was a bill that would make the Pardons and Parole Board follow its own rules, mm-hmm. or, Josh, say why not?
Right.
And it didn't get through because Steve Marshall, Mr. Holier Than Thou, who has the only time to file lawsuits against Joe Biden,
yeah,
supports a Pardon and Parole Board that breaks its own rules. And I don't know what you do about that. The legislature has to stand up to Marshall and say, look, we're going to do what's best for the prison situation and not what's best for Steve Marshall's political career.
Yeah. We've run into this issue where we have determined, first of all, we're a one party state, and that one party is Republican, basically. And it dominates everything. And on the Republican side of things, it is much more beneficial for you to be seen as, quote unquote, tough on crime than it is to be just seen as doing a damn good public service job. And the public service here would be to run a correction system, including a pardons and parole board, that paroles people at a steady rate in a system that can be relied on, that rewards good behavior, that rewards achieving certificates of training, professional training, or getting GEDs, releasing those folks out under monitored situations, making sure that they receive some sort of job and are going to work and are staying out of trouble. And that's a very efficient system. It operates that way in most other states. But in our state, we had an incident that, and this is the way it's always worked. We see it right now with the good time law, where one guy got out on good time, and so now we're going to do away with damn good time laws. So, forget about the 99 others that didn't do anything and followed the rules, and everything worked out fine. And so this is what happened here, though, with the Pardons and Parole Board. We had a person that got out that should not have gotten out on parole. Right. And instead of just correcting that situation, we've destroyed paroles, destroyed them. We don't do them anymore, apparently, white, of course. This is a system that is unworkable. It's unworkable. And Chris England, who sponsored this bill, only wants them to explain why they're not letting these folks out and following their own guidelines. Right.
Well, we can be quote unquote tough on crime, but we're also quote unquote overcrowded in our prisons. And we've got to do something. I mean, according to their own guidelines, between October and December of last year, they should have laid out, the guidelines hover between 80 to 84%, and the actual grant rate only reached 8 to 11%, according to their own guidelines.
And in the meantime, our crime rates went up.
Yeah. Well, and again, it goes back to this other thing, like, where, we're trying to parole people at a certain stage so that they can have access to more adjustment to living in society. And now they want to change that. Because if anything goes wrong, like a mass shooting, we change the gun laws.
Oh, oops.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Right.
If an incarcerated person does something wrong, all of a sudden, oh, we got to change this. We can't have this.
It's politically advantageous. That's all that matters. Nobody cares about lives and what's practical anymore. It's just whatever is politically advantageous.
I have to point out that, speaking of systems, had the a system put in place by the Attorney General's office actually worked, then the guy would have been caught and incarcerated again before he ever shot anybody.
That's true. But anyway, we're going to beat that horse, but it ain't going to ride any better, I guess. Josh, something that you've reported on, Reuters broke the story. A Hyundai supplier not only was accused, but was found to have been employing child labor. Mm-hmm. There have been more instances discovered. This is mm-hmm. something that Steve Marshall did nothing about once he was notified because he was too busy standing up to Joe Biden.
10 auto suppliers, not just a few. We're talking about 10 here.
I mean, children as young as 13, Josh. Our Department of Labor did do something, and there's ongoing work being done.
Yeah, there is. There had been an investigation that was opened up after a second Reuters story detailed, children in 29 plants around the state, that there had firsthand accounts, I believe in 10 of those plants, of child labor taking place. And, mm-hmm. and Hyundai itself opened up an investigation of all 29 plants and performed audits. And now Hyundai is working with the federal government, Department of Labor, and with Terry Sewell's office, because Terry Sewell did get involved and decide to do something. And they are trying to work out a compliance system now and make sure that they are there's no more child labor taking place. They're going to do away with a lot of third party staffing organizations that were staffing some of these suppliers. They're going to implement tip lines and do a number of other things to make sure that they are no longer employing children. And this is it turned into a huge, huge scandal where mainly migrant poor children that were using in these plants.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it should absolutely be a huge scandal.
Outrageous that in 2023, we're still putting children to work like mm-hmm. they're, field hands. Anyway, we are about out of time, but I wanted to recall that it has been 60 years this year since Alabama opened its community college system. And right now it is being more productive than it's ever been, according to the mm-hmm. latest reports. So we want to congratulate the community college system.
Added $6.6 billion.
For the good work they're doing. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to leave it right there. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.